You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. We are going to be talking to an entrepreneur this morning in New York City who is solving a problem that lots of people didn't even know that they had. In fact, they were probably willing to put up with an old technology, and he has come up with a way of doing it. So let's welcome Adam Fields, the founder and CEO of Arda, which is a unique logistics company in the world. So welcome, Adam.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
So Adam, tell us a little bit about what Arda is.
Yeah, definitely. So we combine both technology and logistics to focus on the movement of high-end goods around the world, like art, furniture, antiques, and jewelry, and are trying to combine both a logistics platform with deep industry expertise, to provide an alternative to people who really rely on both FedEx, but also the antiquated supply chains of moving expensive, fragile, and irregular items around the world.
All right, so how did you get into this? What, were you in logistics before?
No, I wasn't really deep in logistics. I've always been really intrigued by logistics. I had a business previously called ArtSpace, which was a platform that was trying to make art and design objects accessible to a broader audience. We were an e-commerce platform, and what I started to recognize and kind of overseeing that operation is that it's never been easier to have a buy button next to an image, but it's really difficult to get items from point of purchase to receipt of objects. I mean, you can't just drop them in a FedEx box. And we were dealing with items that needed, you know, specialized packing, needed extra services, like insurance, installation, crating, and you know, the common carriers like FedEx, UPS, and DHL don't offer that. So we found ourselves in a position in ArtSpace where we didn't have a solution that could automatically output a shipping price to complete a transaction. It's similar, you know, if you were trying to buy something on Amazon and you couldn't get a price to ship it via FedEx, even if it was $25 or $30. You know, it'd be tough for you to kind of want to opt in because you want to know what you're getting yourself into.
So now, primarily, do you service people who are selling online?
It's a good question. So our main kind of customer base are merchants and sellers that are high volume. So, you know, it ranges from large auction houses to art dealers. We don't focus as much on the individual. We ship to a lot of individuals, but it's focused on sellers to try to streamline their post-sale logistics. And you know, the example that I like to give is the onus on shipping is oftentimes the responsibility of the seller. They need to employ large amounts of people to really handle logistics because currently there's a lot to stitch together on a first, middle, and last mile basis. You know, on the other hand, if you're shipping something that, you know, is FedExable or UPSable, you don't need a large staff because you can automatically get a rate and ship anywhere in the world. So we're trying to allow sellers to kind of really optimize and slim down and lean up their operations.
So in a sense, you are providing what Amazon provides almost invisibly. When I buy a book, exactly, Amazon does all of this, and I have no idea. But when I look into it, I mean, it's an enormous operation.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, we live in a world now where consumers and sellers and really everyone has kind of FedEx and Amazon-like expectations. And you know, that really is focused more on what we like to call everyday items. You know, you're buying some clothes, you're buying an iPhone, you know, you're buying, you know, some tchotchkes and stuff, and you can tap into that infrastructure. But really, if you're not, whether you're buying, you know, a table or a chair or a piece of artwork or, you know, something you like that's a collectible, you know, you don't kind of have that experience. So our view is that if we can build that experience and really match those expectations, that's a big opportunity, but it really allows, you know, commerce to be enabled in areas that are, you know, not kind of the normal everyday items.
Well, I remember 40 years ago when I was in college, I was in Boston for the summer. And I was driving back to the university in Fort Worth, and I took a drive-away car because somebody was in Boston wanted to get their car to Texas, and that was the logistics, right?
Yeah.
They paid me a little bit, and I got free transportation to Texas. A year ago, my son had been living here, and he moved back to Warwick, Massachusetts, And the day before he was moving, he called up a car mover. They were here the next day with their trailer, and boom, off they went. That's kind of what you're doing, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's very fragmented across the supplier base. I mean, there are people that just focus on a local, regional, national basis. Sometimes a shipper will just go between, you know, Fort Worth and New York, or New York and Chicago. And oftentimes they might have, you know, extra room on their truck that they're looking to fill up. But at the same token, if you know a shipper, they can't always service what you need. So we view that if we can really add a unifying technology layer across it, it makes it easier to kind of dissect the, you know, the carriers, the pricing, really provide a consolidated point for both buyer and seller to really make it a lot easier to transact and ultimately, hopefully, grow their business and attract, you know, more customers from around the world.
All right. So you're the back end logistics person for the company that wants to work with you.
Yeah, we're that. And then, you know, the main idea too is that, you know, a lot of these industries that we're servicing haven't really proliferated online as much. And our kind of thesis is a lot of that is because, you know, people are willing more and more, you know, over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years to buy, you know, higher price items online. So that the fastest growing e-commerce segment today in the United States is non-conveyable items. That's stuff that is, you know, cannot be going through the FedEx automated sort facilities.
So well, like Wayfair.
Right, exactly. So that's, you know, that's growing at 20% year over year. It's a massive industry growing faster than kind of regular e-commerce, and finding the logistics solutions to service that type of e-commerce is a big opportunity.
All right, so I'm going to imagine something here, where now we can offload all sorts of work to India. Because we have the technology and high-speed internet and low prices there. When India builds a couch, are you in the position to deliver that to Muncie, Indiana?
Well, we are in the position now to do that, and we are getting to the point now where we are automating it essentially across multiple categories and multiple service levels. You know, the problem with shipping things that you can't FedEx is that, you know, it's inherently a bit more expensive. Obviously, you put an iPhone and ship it on the ground, that's going to cost you $10, $15, you know, to go through that network. If you're shipping an item like a couch, you know, a couch can be anywhere from $500 to $50,000. And people kind of equate the cost to ship as a percentage of the overall price. So we're trying to provide both, you know, saving time as money, in that we can make it instantaneous to get a quote, and then bringing down the price by peeling away the layers so there's less subcontracting. But ultimately, yes, we would like to have a seller in India be able to instantaneously transact with a buyer in Muncie, Indiana, and that buyer would be able to, you know, transparently see what their costs would be, so that if they're trying to, you know, buy that couch, they can know what their all-in costs are across the item, the shipping, the import duties and taxes, so on and so forth. And make it as a totally seamless experience.
Well, right now, if I wanted to buy a couch, I would go to a local store, and chances are they would say, great, we'll have it to you in 6 weeks, because they're going to North Carolina to have it built, and they'll have it shipped out, and then they'll deliver it to my house. And so if someone were to offer me a comparable or maybe even more customized couch, and they're in India, without you, I would be reluctant to enter into that conversation.
Well, no, it's exactly right. And I think that's why sometimes, you know, people don't buy things that are further distances away, because it could potentially be more expensive. On the flip side, a lot of businesses are really constrained to where they're selling because they don't have international logistics solutions. So the other side of that is that, you know, a business in India or, you know, an artisan, you know, woodmaker in upstate New York or in, you know, the Valley in California might not be able to sell to anyone outside of their area because they don't have an easy way to get costs and really complete the entire supply chain.
Well, and one of the things that you know, Amazon Prime has done to my mind, and maybe to the general consumer's mind, is I no longer look at the price for shipping, right? Now, it's obviously costing something to ship, and with Amazon, they're dropping the price generally lower than what I'm going to find in the bookstore. But
you're exactly right.
When I begin to think about purchasing a couch, the couch is being sold to me in the same way that Amazon sells it. They don't say to me, we're going to ship this from North Carolina, and here's the shipping cost. They just say, this is the total cost.
Correct.
And so if
they're able to do that is because they know what the costs are, you know, right away. And because of that, they're able to put together, you know, a business case that they're up, you know, 10, 20, whatever, you know, the shipping is to acquire a customer. And what we're trying to tell people is that, you know, now for items that you can't buy on Amazon or you can't, you know, just pop into FedEx to get a rate, we can give you the rate so you can make that business decision and say, hey, I know what the cost of shipping for this item is. I'm willing to eat shipping to try to make a sale. Or why don't I offer 50% of shipping, you know, to lower the cost, to try to, you know, lower the barriers to that sale.
Well, or if my cost of manufacture is low enough, then I can simply say, I'll ship it for free, and it'll still provide a margin for me, and you don't even have to worry about it. Just click here, and it's on the way.
Exactly.
So it's amazing.
Is that logistics is, you know, really the Achilles heel of global commerce and trade. And if it stays so fragmented, it's very difficult. And we have, you know, one of our users in New York, Kristen Tierney Gallery. They're a small, scrappy gallery. They've been in business for 10 years. You know, previously they have to employ someone who literally told us they have to call 12 different vendors to get 12 different bids to try to find the right person to do the job. I mean, that's, you know, that's a lot of overhead and some cost to try to ship one thing you buy for a seller. So if these sellers and small businesses can increase their margins and get people to buy things better and easier, you know, that's a win-win for all sides.
So you're participating in globalization not by outsourcing, but by creating a way for a foreign manufacturer to ship in especially if they can reduce their manufacturing costs to ship at a competitive price.
That's exactly right. And the other side of it too is that we're allowing, you know, people here. The example I like to use is that, you know, FedEx and UPS, which were kind of the e-commerce revolution 1.0, mm-hmm. allowed, you know, let's say a candle maker in Palm Springs to sell to someone in Hong Kong because they didn't have to worry about how it was going to get there. We want to allow that for people to expand their audience on a global scale for areas outside of their local geographies for items that you can't just put it in a FedEx.
So give me a list of 5-6 things that people couldn't put into a FedEx box now.
Well, the kind of, you know, themes or so that we're looking at are really items that are fragile, valuable, large. You know, FedEx and UPS, they're called conveyable items because they literally go in a conveyor belt in an automated sort facility. So they have limits in terms of what they can handle. Usually that's, you know, 100 or 150 pounds. And they're being pushed and, you know, sorted automatically, which is not really being handled as well as they could. So if you have a glass vase, if you have a couch, if you have a painting, if you have a car, if you have a piece of medical equipment or manufacturing equipment, you know, that stuff needs to be handled by a subset of providers along the first, middle, and last mile, which usually takes a lot of time to get a quote because you have to ask a bunch of different people. You have to have trusted providers along the way, but you also need people that have specialization. You need people that can go into, you know, an environment where they can pack something professionally so that it arrives safe, where they can, you know, come inside and install it on the other side, making sure that it can't get caught up in customs, because a lot of times these things have different codes and harmonized codes that need to be articulated to these other areas so they're not held up. You know, there's a lot of things that go into it. Which is why it's so difficult. We think that, you know, UPS and FedEx and those shippers really created a many-to-one solution, meaning you could have hundreds of thousands of SKUs that can be carried out by one solution. For anything that you can't, you know, use that, it's a many-to-many solution. You might, you know, if you're trying to ship a table, you might need to reach out to multiple vendors. Those multiple vendors are reaching out to multiple vendors to complete their quote, so on and so forth. So it really creates a mess underneath the hood.
So if someone wanted to be a seller of used Teslas, they could put together a database of used Teslas around the country, and you could be the deliverer, the logistical solution for them.
Correct. And just to be clear, we're not at cars yet. We've done a little bit of it. We haven't automated that. We're getting there soon. Our main focus right now is art, furniture, design objects, and jewelry. Okay. But that is the idea in theory. Yes.
All right. So let's shift to the entrepreneur's journey. Talk to us about how you started. Where did you come up? Where were you sitting when you had this idea?
Yeah, I mean, I think entrepreneurs kind of come from two angles. I want to start a business and I want to figure out where the opportunities are and kind of doing a top-down, you know, analysis of it. And then I think there's me, which is really more of the bottom up, is that you see a problem, and from most problems come opportunities. And I think I was in that situation at my previous business where it was just very obvious to me that, you know, there is a lot of items that people interact with every day that you cannot just instantaneously get a rate for. And if there's a way to serve that in an e-commerce setting, that all of a sudden allows more people to engage in commerce and become a seller. And we saw that at our last business, that as we started to grow, you know, we didn't have a way to put up a shipping cost. And I started to talk to our users and ask our users, how do you guys deal with shipping these items? And they would say, oh, we have to call a bunch of people and it's a huge pain. And I figured there had to be a solution for it. And there wasn't. And I think, you know, it was really trying to solve a problem that we had and recognizing that there wasn't a solution for it. So that was kind of the light bulb moment.
All right. So you have the idea. Then what?
Well,
you go to the bank and say, give me $1 million. And they did, right?
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, no, they our users pretty much said, you know, if you could find a solution, we'd love you forever. So, you know, I learned a lot. I didn't know about this kind of other, you know, type of logistics infrastructure that really was outside of, you know, the United States Parcel Service and the FedEx side, and really learned a lot more about the freight forwarding and specialized logistics industry. And, you know, we raised a pre-seed round of $1 million in 2016, which is really when we launched the business, to really bring it more from an idea phase to a reality. And you know, a year or so ago, raised another $3 million seed round, and now, you know, I've really taken it from a business that was just focused on the United States to transport things on the ground to a business that, you know, really has automated the entire pricing side of things on a global scale across 50 countries and over 700 cities.
So, all right. So you had the vendor, your customers, and you really started off with what Dan Sullivan says, talk to the people who are going to write a check.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think Paul Graham, you know, he's a San Francisco Y Combinator, you know, legendary investor. He always says, you know, you got to start out doing things that are not scalable. So what we really did was we started out with no technology at all. You know, I hired someone who had experience in the shipping side. I had a lot of relationships on the demand side. And we started going to the demand side saying, hey, let us know you're shipping this stuff. We want to try to get you some competitive bids, which helped us, you know, demonstrate value to them, build out our supplier network, and then, you know, started to build some technology in between to try to bring in a bit more online. So, you know, it started out no technology at all, more of just kind of an offline broker learning as much as we could, and then started to kind of fold in some of the technology side of it.
Okay. All right. So you had the idea. And then you went to the people who could write a check and said, what if?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. We said, what if? And we said, what if you didn't have to reach out to three or four people each time? What if it didn't have to take a week to get a quote back? You know, what if your customers could be happy? What if you can move your inventory out sooner? What if you can reach people online as a distribution channel versus offline? And the answers were pretty astoundingly, that would be amazing, you know. If you can make it happen, you know, we would use you. And that was true.
Okay. All right. Okay. Then what? So you got a proof of concept, right? You're making a little margin.
Yep.
You hired a logistics, experienced logistics, maybe a guru, but at least he's got experience in logistics, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the analogy I kind of use for entrepreneurship and just kind of building a business from the scratch is really, you know, you drop some water on the sidewalk or, you know, on the side of a little hill, and it's not a straight line. You know, they're trying to see the path that they need to go to really get to the final destination. And I think that's, you know, really, really true for what we try to do, which is that you have an idea, you have a vision, but you need to be guided by asking questions and really reading the data and seeing how people respond. We talked to a lot of people. We saw how people responded to it. The thing that people came back with and said, this is great. You're on to something really good. But, you know, our biggest challenge outside of just gathering quotes and really dealing with the shipping is international. So we said, okay, we started out just on the domestic U.S. side. It's working really well. Obviously, our customers want to have a more global solution. So we needed to build a more global solution. So that's what we started to focus on next, and expanded our platform and our capabilities on our international level.
Now, Dan Sullivan talks about finding the who rather than the how. Is that true for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the concept that we kind of subscribe to is the idea of product market fit, which is, you know, you're building something, but you need to get it to a point where your demand side can't live without you, you know, and I think that that's exactly what you're trying to get at. We found something that people like, but we needed to get it to a point where they said, if you guys went out of business or just, you know, went away with a snap, our lives would be fundamentally different. And you know, if you think about, you know, your iPhone and Amazon and all these things, people, you know, if they went away, people would say, yes, my life is definitively worse. And that's kind of what we want to get to. We want to influence the way people operate, you know, so substantially that they become so dependent on us that they can't live without us. And that's really what we're on the track to kind of proving out right now.
So what's the size of your organization in terms of people now?
So on the people front, we are 18 people. Right. So, you know, we've done a lot with a little. We have an office in London. You know, the organization is kind of split up between operations, you know, the shipments that are going out, product and technology, marketing, and client services and account management.
So how do you hire? Who gets into those seats?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we're an organization that is kind of melding two different worlds, and that is both logistics and technology, and people from those worlds are very different. You know, so half of our organization is kind of startup and technology veterans, and part of the organization are people that are from the logistics world, which historically has a lack of technology. So trying to get the technology side to understand, okay, you know, the people that you're going to be talking to, whether it's internally or the shippers or our users, you know, kind of are tech adverse. And then on the other side, it's trying to get the people that, you know, might not have as deep of a technology background to try to think outside the box and understand that, you know, we're trying to change the status quo and change the way things happen. So, you know, it's fun. Everyone's learning. It's different perspectives and trying to meld them together and trying to find people really that are outside the box thinkers and understand that the world is constantly changing. And every 6 to 12 months, you have a thesis that you might need to adjust a little bit to kind of continue to grow and expand.
Yeah. All right. So you got people in London, you got people in New York, you got people in LA?
We're not yet. Well, we have, you know, we do a lot of business in LA. LA is our second biggest market. We just launched, as I mentioned, we've automated the pricing. One of the big features that we have is instant quoting. The biggest route that we have in terms of people utilizing that instant quote feature is LA, New York, LA, so on and so forth. So that corridor and LA is our second biggest market. So we do a lot in LA and California in general.
So what are the tools that you use to sync your various offices?
Internally, I mean, Slack is really big for us. You know, that obviously has been making, you know, a lot of noise. They just went public. You know, we really like that internally. We use, you know, Gmail as our kind of email server. So the docs, you know, that you can use, whether it's the, you know, the Excel function or the spreadsheet function. We use Dropbox a lot, you know, for taking notes and kind of, you know, customer interviews. And then a few internal tools, Intercom, to help manage, you know, marketing and customers. We use Metabase, which sits on top of our database, so we can easily, you know, kind of pull information. Those are kind of the main ones. Stripe and Adyen we use to kind of process our payments. You know, we live in a world where you don't have to build out as much as you
used to. Right. You just, and then that's the world you're building too, right?
No,
you don't
exactly.
You have to go get a truck or a trailer.
No, we live in a world of specialization. I think that helps both the people trying to build the businesses, but also, you know, we're trying to build a business for people to focus on what they do, which is hopefully selling, not necessarily, you know, logistics and supply chain.
Right. Well, we're coming to the time where you've got something else coming up. So tell us a little bit, what would you like to tell the world?
What would I like to tell the world? My view and our kind of thesis on the world is that it's built on an outdated commerce stack. And that commerce stack is focused a lot on what we're calling everyday items. And that's, you know, that's the stuff that you buy at Amazon and eBay and you know, can ship with FedEx and process with PayPal. And that stack's been innovated upon a lot, you know, with drones and driverless cars. But there's an entire world out there that I feel like is kind of going beneath the wayside that has massive opportunities for buyers and sellers. And we're really trying to break down those barriers to make it as easy to buy and sell, you know, a painting or a beautiful, beautiful collectible item as it is, you know, an iPhone or a water bottle or some headphones. And I think we're getting there, but, you know, it's really trying to change the way people think and operate that have been thinking and operating the same way for a long time. So, you know, we think we can kind of change the world a little bit by trying to push it forward.
What would you like people to do?
What I like people to do? Well, I think they should check us out. I guess at, you know, our website is shiparta, shiparta.com. We love to try to streamline this entire logistical process, hopefully enabling commerce for people that are trying to set up a Shopify store or trying to sell some stuff at auction. And, you know, hopefully we can allow all these precious and beautiful items that we're shipping to proliferate more broadly and you know, be in people's homes and become more enjoyable and hopefully allow businesses to raise their margins and grow their businesses and so on and so forth.
So couch manufacturers in India, right?
Couch manufacturers in India, yeah. Or buyers in Muncie, Indiana, I guess, too, right?
Right. Good. So email address?
Shiparta.com. Hello at Shiparta if you want to say hello. We have an API. We're coming out with so any kind of online seller, online marketplace, we're solving a big problem for those kind of guys or gals, of course, and would really love to try to, you know, get our product out there more to hopefully, you know, enable commerce and streamline logistics for everyone.
Yeah, excellent. Well, thanks, Adam, for sharing all this wonderful entrepreneurial insight that you're experiencing. It sounds like there's a lot of fun. Let's plan to have another conversation and stay in touch, right?
Great. Appreciate it. Thanks again.
All right. Well, folks, there's another great example of how to thrive, make your business thrive. And we talk specifically about California, but here's a guy who's coming into the port of Long Beach from New York and going to help provide a lot more logistical insight and support for artists, musicians, shippers, manufacturers in California. So another way for businesses in California to thrive.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist.